Welcome to Fire Engineering Podcasts, where each day you'll hear a variety of voices speaking on timely topics facing the American Fire Service. The best way to keep up with fire engineering is via our free daily e-newsletter. Learn more at fireengineering.com/e-newsletter.
Okay, everybody, this is Joe Pernesti on Main Street Firefighting, my podcast on Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio. Once again, as always, I want to thank Bobby Halton and the crew there for giving me this opportunity to improve not only mine, but everybody that's listening to this can gain all kinds of knowledge. And for that, to Bobby and the crew, I really want to thank you. It's a lifelong dream. Today, we are going to talk about reading smoke. And we have probably one of the most educated people around when it comes to this. When you look at every occupation, let's take it as sports. Your quarterback, got to be able to read the defense. Baseball, got to be able to see what the pitcher's offering and reading their pitches or how the defense is aligned. Basketball, well, what kind of defense are they in? How to play to your strengths. And that is, in our field, reading smoke. And we have Phil Joes here with us. Phil, thank you. It's an honor. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you came to this really probably one of the most important things besides building construction, in my opinion, about reading smoke. Phil, welcome.
Well, thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me. And obviously, always a shout out to the folks at Fire Engineering for giving us all this great platform to interact about our passion and love, and that's fire service. Yeah, so I'm retired. I've been retired a little over a year out of Seattle Fire. I did about 31 or so years there. And I retired. I was a deputy chief operations, so shift commander there. Prior to that, I was deputy chief of training division. And then obviously working as a battalion chief and a captain and all that kind of stuff as I was coming up. About equal amount of time on the engine and the truck, just slightly favored for the truck, both in time and in personal preference, I suppose. I started teaching at FDIC in 2004, I think was the first year I taught there. And through that experience was able to meet people like Dave Dotson, who originated the Reading Smoke program. And then about, I think it's probably 4 years ago or so now, well, it's in the intervening time, you know, I'd see Dave out teaching on the road. And a couple times we taught programs together with Dave and my Seattle fellas, which is me and Mike Galliano, Casey Phillips, and Steve Bernocco, who wrote the book Air Management for the Fire Service together. So the four of us were teaching, got a chance to teach with Dave. And then about 4 years ago, Dave came to me. We were at FDIC and having dinner, and he said, "Hey, Phil, he's been teaching on the road for 20 some years full time." Yeah. And yeah, that's where most of us know him from. Certainly that's where I first saw him, when he came to the Seattle area. And he said, "Hey, I'm going to give up teaching on the road. Are you interested in taking on the Reading Smoke curriculum?" And I thought, wow. Honestly, Joe, I was a little taken aback just because I hadn't even really considered that. I never really thought about that as an option. And so it's a great opportunity. Let me go home and talk to the boss about it, and then as soon as I got home and had a little chance to think about it, I thought, how can I say no? How can I say no? Right?
Yeah, it's like a Beatle asking you to play with them.
yeah. So I tutored under Dave for about a year and a half, and I would have been happy just to keep tutoring with him, but like any good mentor, he kicked me out of the nest and said, "Get out there on your own." So there's, you know, so that's part of the deal for me is ever since the first class I had with Dave, I've always really, really valued the Reading Smoke curriculum and have used it as a company officer inside the building, outside the building. I've used it as a chief officer inside the building and outside the building. And then, you know, as a deputy chief, as a shift commander, obviously that's largely outside, but the mental models that I developed over the course of time, and then taking just the student aspect and then putting forth the effort to learn it as an instructor, was, you know, really not only brought home the messages, but, you know, increased my own willingness and ability to study on a daily basis. It's sort of funny because I still watch fire video every single day. You know, I do every Wednesday I have something on the SBSK Facebook page, mm-hmm. For Reading Smoke. I did a fire engineering webcast just, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, something like that. I'm still interested. I teach tactics. I write articles. I'm writing one right now with Dennis Laguerre. We're probably in our seventh or eighth edit. So, you know, I'm still engaged in the game as much as I can be, even though I'm not on the street. And the opportunity that Dave gave me taking it over was really great. So that's besides just being retired and doing my fun stuff, I go out on the road and teach Reading Smoke.
You mentioned your career path, and it brings me to this point of, does each rank have a different way of reading smoke? What I mean by that is, let's say we put it in a room, you know, Phil, we have a room, you're teaching, and you have one firefighter, one lieutenant, one, you know, or a company officer, let's just say, a shift commander, a battalion chief. Is each of those ranks, do they have to see things differently, or how can they apply what they're reading based on their actual fire ground duty when they arrive?
Well, I think the answer to that question is yes. Are they the same? Yes. Are they different? Yes. And so you have to have an understanding. I think as you move from being, do firefighters need to read smoke? Sure they do. You know, we can take everything from, let's just take an example. If I have a firefighter and company officer at the front door, you know, stretching a line for a single family residence, going to the front door, and they're going to force the door entry and conduct a fire attack. And of course, we're going to follow that with search and the other things. But the minute they arrive, they should be reading smoke volume, velocity, density, color. Use that to predict in some measure where they think the fire is, how big the fire is, how they're going to get there based on not just the reading smoke, but one is to inventory the attributes, VVDC, and the other is to apply that to the building and read the building, read the smoke, and figure out what's going on. So once they determine where they think the fire is, of course they can use things like their thermal imager and information from bystanders. And these are just individual pieces, right, that create a whole entire picture. So now you have a basis for understanding. And those two firefighters, firefighter company officer at the front door, when they open that door, now they're limited to the view that's in front of them, right? They're going to be, you know, within probably 8 to 10 feet of the door. The door's going to open and they're going to read the smoke. How much does it lift? How much is it venting out over their head? What's the air track that as the smoke comes out, the air track goes in? Most likely you're going to establish a bidirectional flow. Where is the neutral plane? You know, there's a lot of information there that you can get just from your initial read opening the door. Now, that's those two firefighters, firefighter officer right there in front of the door with the line ready to do their fire attack. Another team, let's say outside team for the truck, they're working around the back of the building trying to identify the fire compartment. Well, if we look at the same size or type of openings, if we go to the back of a house, we probably have all windows of the same era installed on the same day with the same manufacturer, right? So if I look at the windows and I can tell from the velocity which window cracks and seams have the highest velocity smoke, that's going to be closest to the seat of the fire. So now I have my outside team ready to do their ventilation. And then we can go to the chief officer who's standing at the command post. And ideally, I'm able to see that front door. I'm able to see some other elements of the building if I'm positioned where I can see at least a corner of the structure. If I've done my 360 myself, even better, right? It may have been done by someone else, but now am I watching that door? Sure. Sure I am. Am I watching the roof E-line? Sure I am. Am I checking the cracks and seams around the window? Absolutely. And I'm doing that with my eyes up and my eyes open. And Joe, we had a fire. This is one of the reasons I love teaching this class. We had a fire. I wasn't there, but in the Seattle Fire Department, it's called the Dog Gate Fire. And the reason is this little one-story, World War II era, 1,400 square foot house with a kitchen in the back and a pretty good working fire in the kitchen. And they opened the front door. And initially the smoke was coming out maybe a foot from the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they start making their fire attack, and it's called the Dog Gate Fire because these people had a couple of Dobermans and they had a dog gate installed, and it wasn't just like a little flimsy thing, right? They actually screwed it to the wall so the humans would step over it. Instead of training the dogs, right, to stay out of the kitchen, the humans stepped over it. So as the crew's going in there, they hit this gate. And it's hot enough that they can't go over. And they, of course, at first they think they're just going to blow through it. So they start to try and remove it. One of the truckies right behind him, the guy that's like 6'6", he actually gets on his back and starts kicking the gate with both feet like you would maybe a donkey kick door or something.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they just can't get this gate out. In the meantime, of course, the fire is growing. And the chief officer's outside, and now the smoke's down. It's not a foot from the top of the door. It's a foot from the bottom of the door. And it's coming out high velocity, turbulent black smoke. And when the next company gets there, his captain, very senior captain, he's battalion chief now, basically says, hey, get in there and find out what's going on. So the captain really literally climbs over people, gets to the nozzle person, and says, hey, open the line. They open the line. Problem goes away, right? And this was in that transition between the whole don't put water on smoke to now the sort of the modern application of water. But the point is that the chief officer standing outside could tell that things were not going well. The expectation of time between when that crew went in the front door and when the problem should be solved is a pretty short window in a department like the city of Seattle with four-person staffing and all that sort of stuff, right?
Right.
So reading the smoke, his expectations aren't being met. And that indicates there's a problem, and now he starts to solve the problem. And so there's a spot for everybody to understand what they're seeing, how to interpret that to the best extent possible, and to apply those lessons in a tactical system where people have both responsibility to do certain things, but also an accountability to your independent actions being recognizing the importance of where they are as a whole, so you're not breaking windows just because you arrived at the back of the building, but because you know that the crew is operating and ready to flow water.
Right.
Those sorts of things. So there's something for everybody there.
Are we doing enough? All right. So I've been on 30, I'm in my 32nd year. And one of the best things that I wish early on in my career, or at least early on as a company officer and a command officer, I wish I had the technology available then like I do now as far as studying and videos and being able to go to the internet and all those things. But are we doing enough as a fire service in educating our members on, okay, like you said, you go every day and you look at fire video, as do I, but are we doing enough that little Johnny or Susie firefighter that is sitting there at the table with their phone looking at one of these websites, that are we doing enough to educate them on, okay, when you look at this video, don't look at what they're doing as far as screwing up or laying a line or doing this wrong, doing that wrong. hey, focus in on reading that smoke, or what is it telling you? I just don't think that I think we as a fire service are too critical sometimes. A lot of us, we see these things and we're just first thing out of our mouth is, oh, they're doing this wrong, rather than showing them, okay, let's watch this. Let's watch this for 5 minutes. You know what I mean? I feel like we're just not doing enough. And I was just curious what your thought is, because video's everywhere. You it's endless on what you can see. And it's all a younger generation knows, is that, you know, constant social bombardment of information. How do we slow it down and say, hey, look at this fire. Don't worry about what they're doing. Let's look at the smoke and how it's behaving.
Yeah, I think, I believe it was Branding that said you can never know enough about a building that can kill you or something along that lines, right?
Yeah.
And so are we doing enough? I think that's a hard question. Is it ever enough? I know if it's a passion of yours, you're certainly spending time on it.
Right.
I think the amount of fire behavior that's required in NFPA 1001 for firefighter one is, I don't know the number, Joe, but I think it's pretty insignificant.
In state of Ohio, it's 3 hours. So like when you have an 18, 19, 20 year old kid go to school or go to the fire academy, they're getting 3 hours of fire behavior. You know, I don't know what it's like in Washington, but in Ohio, it's 3 hours.
Yeah, and there's a lecture portion, and then there's the actual fire behavior stuff that you're going to do with your, in our academy, 16 and a half weeks, right? So they get their basic lectures on fire behavior and that stuff, and then we take them to live fire training. We're doing, you know, the burn to learn and regularly reinforcing some of these things. In fact, to the point that, like, if you're on an outside team doing ventilation, you'll get to the position, and the instructor will say, give you a visual cue. You see this type of smoke, you hear this, you hear that. And then the there's heavy black smoke in the engine. You can hear the engine operating. Well, then the recruit will immediately start taking the windows out. Right. But
right.
If they say, there's heavy black smoke, but you don't know if the engine's operating or not, then they'll just wait, or they might get on their radio and say, hey, a command from outside team, I'm positioned ready to ventilate. Right. So that you're, even though they can't actually see it, you're giving them visual cues. But that's, you know, in a curriculum where not only do we have the curriculum, but we have line officers who are working within that training division for either one class or four classes in order to be able to build and maintain sort of those sort of inputs. But if I compare even all that sort of effort that we can do through their live fire training, everything, I think, you know, we were doing 8 full days of hazmat in order to meet the new requirements for operations level.
Right.
I think, well, when this kid goes out of the line, their first day, they're certainly not going to be running a hazmat operation, but they very, very well could be first in on a house fire.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Person right at that front door in our organization, we're hiring so fast that, you could have a brand new probie, number 4, and number 3 could be somebody who has 13 or 14 months in.
Right.
And I don't think that's unusual now. So
no, but I think you have to have a baseline, because I've always felt, and I'm curious of your opinion on this, is that, in the fire service, when you can't just flip a switch in 10 years and figure out how to read smoke or whatever it is. In this case, we're talking about reading smoke. It has to begin at the very first day on the job or in the academy, and it builds upon it. That said, is there a difference between reading the smoke, reading the building, or how does a young firefighter, company officer, chief that we're talking about, how they see things differently, how do they then put together the smoke and the building? How do they put those two? Because that's, to me, you can't do one without the other. You got to be able to read the smoke, but you also have to understand what kind of building you're dealing with, or, you know, whether it's a residential in my neck of the woods. I'm all balloon frame, very old area where I work. So I have a lot of balloon frame. I have to be able to identify that reading smoke and teach that to my crews. And then also I teach and do a lot with type 3 ordinary construction. So another type of building to relate. How do we mesh those two gears?
Yeah, I think there's a combination of learning, Joe, that is both individual and grouped, right? So you should be studying your building construction and how to identify balloon frame versus platform, that, you know, type, era, and use. Those things you can study individually. Reading smoke, you can study individually. Looking at video and saying, okay, where's the fastest smoke for the most restricted opening? What are the windows telling me? And then not only what is it telling me now, but like one of the things that I try to get people to do when I'm teaching classes live, right? When people bring me in, it's like, hey, when you're watching a video, just pick any video, like you said, don't worry about what the fire department's going to do, and say, or even if you have video for before the fire department's arrival, and say, okay, look at it and stop the video, and just in your mind be able to go, what's this going to look like? Like, how long in your organization would it take to have someone come off the rig, stretch a line, get the line charged, mask up, and be ready to go in and fight fire, right? If it was if you were gonna be doing an interior offensive operation, okay, if that's a 60 second window, if that's a 90 second window, whatever that is, just take that video, stop it at the 2 minute mark. Let's say it's 90 seconds, right? You stop the video at the 2 minute mark, in your mind say, okay, here's what I think it's gonna look like, and then don't watch it for the next 90 seconds, just drag the cursor all the way to the 3.5 minute mark.
That's
and
smart.
Hit play.
Yeah.
And say, okay, are my predictions accurate? If they are, great. If they're not, where do I need to adjust when I look at something quickly and I make an assessment? How do I need to adjust? Where did I make my mistake? Did I make my mistake on the type of building? Did I make my mistake? Not, I didn't read the windows thoroughly enough to sort of build in the skill and narrow it down and just improve it, because reading smoke is a skill, and like, yes, any other skill, it's a mind skill, certainly, right? Reading buildings, right, is a skill. So the more you practice it, the more you make your assessment, guess what's going to happen, look and see if that's what actually happens, and sort of try to build in these mental models and just try and make them as accurate as you can, because none of them are ever perfect, right?
Right.
And as soon as you say it takes my crew, I mean, this is one thing I could tell you, Joe, and anybody who's made the jump from company officer to chief officer, it's like the first time you go to an event. I remember the first time I went to an extrication where I wasn't in charge of it. I wasn't in charge of the rescue group. I wasn't doing the actual work.
Right.
I was standing back commanding the work. I thought to myself, how can these people move? How can my fire department got three times as slow as it was yesterday?
Right.
But it didn't, right? It was still a lot of competent people doing excellent work. Just my mental model of standing back there and watching the time element was not very accurate. I was, you know, so over the course of time, I got better at that. I got better at understanding when I'm watching crews drilling. I have now after being a chief officer for years, and of course my time as company as a recruit instructor helps, but I can take any crew out and watch them drill on any exercise for 2 minutes, and I would be able to tell you the only thing I needed to know about that crew: are they training regularly? If they're training regularly, I can tell. I don't care what the evolution is, I can tell in 2 minutes. And if they're not training regularly, so how they perform on a particular drill, you know, that's going to have some ebbs and flows to it. But is that company officer training that company regularly? As a chief officer, that's what I need to know, because if they're not, I have a problem I need to fix. If
Absolutely.
They are, then I just need to make sure I give them the right resources and opportunity, right? So if we're, as long as we're doing it regularly and applying ourselves regularly, occasionally focusing in on the individual thing, like just reading smoke, just reading building, just stretching, just forcing doors, and then other times putting them in combination, either individually or with, you know, individual skills, company level skills, multi-company skills, right? It's the same thing with your brain.
If you're a young firefighter listening to this podcast or a newly promoted officer, Phil just hits on an excellent, excellent point. You have to do something a little bit every day and build on it and build on it. You are not going to be able to put, nor should you try to, the entire puzzle together overnight. You are not going to become a good firefighter, a company officer, chief, whatever you aspire to be, unless you begin now and start putting the pieces together early and every day and a little bit every day, and it builds. Chief, as we look at the four big ones, and I know volume, velocity, density, color, is there one that's more important? I've always wanted to ask, and I always ask, been to Dotson's class. I have not had an opportunity to see you in person yet. Excellent. If you're listening to this, you will still be able to, when this goes to air on Fire Engineering, you will still be able to access Phil's webcast that he did for Fire Engineering on Reading Smoke. So certainly look that up, and we will make sure that that link is with this podcast. But of the four, is there one that's more important than the other?
Well, I'd say, Joe, is when we look at volume, velocity, density, color, the two in the middle, velocity and density, I like to think those are the cake, and volume and or velocity, density are the cake, and volume and color are the sprinkles. You know, so when we're looking at velocity is basically a measurement of how hot stuff is, right? So we can look at it in two terms. One is laminar, which is smooth without agitation, and then turbulent, which everybody can probably picture in their mind's eye right now, you know, rapid, without order, you know, chaotic, you know, that smoke that's coming out and it's just churning as it comes out. So those are sort of your over under, right? It's really just a measure of heat there. And then density, when we look at density, what we can say about any smoke is from wherever we see it to the seat of the fire, there's a continuity there, right? The smoke goes from here all the way back. And so if we recognize the underlying principle, which is smoke is fuel, smoke is fuel, smoke is fuel, right? I really use that a lot in my classes. And so we say, okay, so there's a continuity of fuel from wherever we're seeing the smoke to the seat of the fire. Now, density is going to tell you is basically how rich or how lean that fuel is. Too rich, it's not going to burn. Too lean, it's not going to burn. Yep. Just right. So you have this combination of right temperature, right mix. So right temperature, that's your turbulent velocity, turbulent laminar. Is it the right temperature? If it's turbulent, you can guarantee it's in the right temperature. Is it the right mix? Your density is going to tell you that, right? So, and there's also just things to understand, like firefighter company officer going in on that firefight that I was telling you earlier, they cannot control the density, right? They have limited control over the density because of the way fire behavior works and interacts with buildings. I can never guarantee you that a door is not going to fail. I can never guarantee you that a window is not going to fail. If I don't change anything other than opening the front door, then I can probably make a really great assessment of how quickly I can get to the seat of the fire and what's going to happen in that intervening time. But if the window breaks, if somebody is overexuberant in their venting, if a door fails, if the wind's blowing, right? What I can do is I can, if I'm that team, is I can control the temperature because I'm bringing water with me. And as long as I keep that temperature, so the real key is to keep it below the ignition temperature of any individual piece of the fuel package. Smoke is fuel. Hot fuel is bad. Cool fuel is no problem at all. So as long as I keep that fuel package below the ignition temperature of the earliest fire gases, which is in the 450 range, right? We can get out a micrometer and talk about whether it's 427 or 486. We're not working with micrometers on the fire ground, right?
Right.
General sense. So
wet fuel, a wet couch won't light off, or when we're talking about, you know, water and temperature, cool the area, cool the box is a good way. I like to try to think of everything in a box and try to identify to a younger firefighter. If you could just think of a box, some boxes are going to be bigger than others. Some, you know, construction wise, if you have a brand new house, the box is going to be wide open inside. An older houses in my community, you got to have a box and a box and a box with the separation of the rooms and walls. So you hit on some very important points, but I guess the very number one takeaway is that you can control the temperature, correct?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Not only that, Joe, but think about the difference between when I came in and when I was a lieutenant in the training academy, it was all about don't put water on smoke. Yeah. I mean, it was just,
yeah.
Now we're 20 years later, we're 180 out from that. Whereas, you know, what I would advocate now, and there's certainly a range of behaviors in between, but what I would advocate now is the default position for the nozzle should be open.
Yes.
And you should understand when it should be closed. Absolutely. You should understand that it doesn't always have to be flowing all the time in every situation. Definitely true. But if we start from a default position is open, if you're not sure, open the line. If we start from the worst case scenario and then train our firefighters how to use it better, how to be more efficient, how to hit and move, whether you're trying to make a push where you're flowing and moving together, that's the default. Can you hit and move? Sure you can. Can you move quickly and then hit? Sure you can. But if we back up to the default position, what we've changed from is teaching firefighters that the default position of the nozzle is closed to we should be teaching them that the default position of the nozzle is open. And if we do just that one thing, overall, we're going to be a lot more effective at making sure that our brand new people have the minimum skills they need, which is what, you know,
right.
And you come out of the academy, a lot, you know, there's a lot to learn, Joe. And if we make sure that they have the minimum they need to go home at the end of the shift, then at least we've started them out on the right path.
Well, yeah. And it could be overwhelming. As we wrap this up, I want to ask you about one tactic and reading smoke associated with that tactic. When you and I started on the job, VES or VIS was, you know, it was unheard of or was strictly in New York, the largest cities. Well, today I think it's become it's taught everywhere. It's a, you know, with the today's residential construction being open, that's a tactic that we're going to utilize. Is there a good way to associate, or if someone were to talk to you specifically about that VEIS and reading smoke, how to incorporate that into that young firefighter who's going up that ladder to take that window to save a life? I mean, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. And Joe, I gotta say, I think there's no doubt that, VEIS has a place on the fire ground. There's just no substitute for it in some situations. And so the over under, I think, and people sort, you know, occasionally people get Twitter paid a little bit about putting the eye in there. And the reason I like the eye in there is because when you're at the top of the ladder, or when you're making your way there, as you're putting your ladder up and you're looking at that window, I think what you're really trying to determine, the biggest single factor that I think you need to determine is the door to that room open or closed? Mm-hmm. Is it isolated? Does the eye already exist? If it does, then the risk of breaking the window, going in there and searching, if you know the door is already closed, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
Right. From a risk perspective, it's, I would even say, I mean, it'd be hard to call it low risk, but I think it would not be high. It would be moderate. No. Right.
Right.
But if I know that that went, if I know that that door is open now, right now, I have to recognize that the minute, the second I break that window, I've got a clock ticking, and it's a really, really short clock.
Right.
And I really don't know how long that clock is, because I don't know what exactly is going to happen with the flow path. I can make some assessments, right? But I don't know exactly. So what I have to be sure of is that when I break this window, am I going to be able to get in there and shut the door? And most of the time you can. The one area, and I think we, you know, we could get some subject matter expertise. The one time I think you'd want to be cognizant is if you are in an obvious hoarder house.
Right.
Because I'll tell you, if you break the window, you're not going to get the door closed.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. That's an excellent, right? Excellent and, point.
And so what we're measuring is what's the volume of velocity around the window? Does the fire have enough energy that it's pushing smoke around the cracks and seams of the window? Can I read the window, see the sweat inside? Is it black stained? And is there smoke pushing out around the edges? If there is, I know the bedroom door is open. I know it's open. And right. So does that mean you don't do it? No, that's not what that means. It means understand that when you break the window, you better be ready, because right. You have the clock's ticking, man. And
right.
you got to get in there. You got to get that door closed. That's the most important thing you're going to do. Now we've got the eye, but if I go to that window and I don't have those conditions, I know the eye is already taken care of, probably. Right. And
right.
I should still be ready when I break the window, but the mental game of knowing what's going to happen when you break the glass is really important.
What is your thoughts to our listeners? Now, very important. We're probably talking to an entire generation of listeners that in their career, they do not know a time when there wasn't some sort of thermal imaging camera or, you know, a tick. Do we rely too much on technology today? I, for one, when I taught at a fire academy, basically what we would do is we would go into a town that would donate a building or house. We would invite the local fire department to say, okay, you want to participate while we're training this academy, come on down. And I noticed that in a lot of the departments, the crews would come off the truck. They would be assigned to me to go through as at their point of the live burn attack or whatever. And that thermal imaging camera would be glued to the officer's face. And I would say, what are you doing? He goes, well, I got to have my thermal imaging camera with me. Well, yes, you do, but you know what? Take it down for a second. Let's look at this whole picture here. There's a time for that tool. My question specifically to you is, are we relying too much on it? And how do we incorporate that technology that's only getting smaller and compact and better and fancy? But how do we incorporate that with what you're teaching as far as reading that smoke?
Yeah, I think I'm sure there's people who are using it too much, and I'm sure we could go the full spectrum to people who haven't even taken it out of the case yet, right?
Yeah.
When I was a truck officer, what I like to do is have it in my hand when I rolled in. So I would look at the building with my eyes, but I'd also look at it with the imager, really, really at night in particular. And could I learn a ton? Yeah, I mean, I could learn a ton about the building by looking at it through that imager, but it's not my, I would say it's sort of like if we looked at volume, velocity, density, color, we say that velocity and density are the cake and volume and color are the icing. What I would say is your eyes are the cake and the thermal imager is the icing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
know? Well,
and should you be using it intermittently? Absolutely. When you're searching, should you pop a door and use that imager to scan the room? Absolutely, Joe.
Yes.
You gotta do that because it might be an instantaneous read that there's a victim, right? But as I head into that room, am I gonna look through it full time? No, I'm gonna look. I'm gonna say, I've cleared this side of the bed. I'll go to the back. So I'll put it down. I'll hustle over, take a shot. Maybe, you know, whatever it is, just quickly glancing at the imager rather than being affixed to it. And I think there's a good translation there when we look at places where the company, where the chief officers have to run tablets. Man, you know, you can get burrowed in on that tablet. Yes. And never look up and see the fire. And the same thing is true with the imager. Don't get burrowed in on it. Just use it. Absolutely. Use it. Use it regularly. Use it from the beginning through the overhaul period. I mean, use it all the time. But recognize that it's a piece. It's the icing. It's not the cake.
Chief, if people want to get hold of you, this has been wonderful. And you know, if you've taken Dotson's class and say, well, you know what? What's this guy? I've taken it. Same thing or whatever. No. I believe that Phil has a different, while both are great. If you've taken Dotson's, don't think, well, this guy is just the same thing. He has his own different, I don't want to say spin, but a different set of eyes and experience. So if you're listening to this podcast and you want to continue learning or you've been through the classes, consider attending Phil's classes. And that said, how can people get a hold of you, Chief, if they want a class or they want to talk to you further on this most important tactic of reading smoke?
Joe, they can. I'm pretty easy to find on social media if they just search my name, Phil Jose, and the last name is spelled J-O-S-E. My website, my teaching business is called Ignition Point Training. I want to set everybody's mind on fire, right? So, I want to get your thinking to that ignition point. So, Ignition Point Training, www in front of that, you'll find me on the web, and. I really love this class, Joe. I also, you know, teach tactics, some tactical decision making and instructor development are also some areas that I'm working on. And I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to getting back out teaching. I'm so missing the interaction with, you know, your regular humans every day, but this is probably going to be the longest stretch where I haven't taught a class to somebody other than through the web. You know, going back when I started in the fire department. I mean, I was teaching swimming lessons before that. Right? So I've been teaching a long time. And I certainly miss it. And I certainly appreciate this opportunity you've given me.
Well, yes. And I thank you. And for our listeners, probably when you're listening to this, I hope we're recording this in the middle of the pandemic. That's affecting all of us. We are recording this on April 17th of 2020. So you know then that we are in the middle of this. And hopefully when this goes to air on Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio, we are out of this. Chief, I want to personally thank you. I really appreciate everything you've done. And thanks. I'd like to do this again sometime.
Thank you, Joe.